Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Oh, tonight we got them, Goldie the Sulk and JC.
Disgusting the flag.
And it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. Don't adjust your volume. My voice is a little hoarse. but it's a little husky, sultry.
It's husky.
I've got sort
You're giving yourself a lot of credit here.
A radio voice.
I need to
A voice and a face made for radio. That's okay. What we got here today.
Okay, fine.
First joke of the day.
That's not even his joke. That's like a joke from 1950. A face made for radio.
Oh, jeez, Goldie.
We can do that now.
Oh God, Goldie, you're unbelievable.
You
come on and clear your throat, and it's first joke of the day, and then all of a sudden
funny.
You got a problem with this. I'm so sorry.
Why was Cinderella so bad at soccer? She kept running away from the ball.
Second joke of the day. Actually, I've never heard that one before, so that was a terrible example.
What do you call an angry carrot? A steamed veggie. I could just go to the internet and get a joke.
That's a pretty good one.
Oh my God.
I'd never heard of either of those.
I know,
they were new to me.
It's supposed to be work, and we stumble into it.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. All right.
The guy who gets first joke of the day with a hair trigger every week.
I have one thing in life. It's first joke of the day. The only thing that's ever gone well for me.
Don't you have
You
children?
Have everything.
Yeah.
And you have to have, you see my tiny dust-covered jewel, and you say, I'll take that, thank you.
Pluck, yoink. Well, one thing I do have, which we can all agree on, is a large nose. And I wanted to start talking this week about something that should be a big headline in the over-nosed community, which is this new debacle, Maestro. Okay, Bradley Cooper's Netflix film that he, you know, produced and starred in about Leonard Bernstein, the story nobody cared about, nobody asked for. Bradley Cooper decided to strap on a fake honker and just desperately bid for an Oscar. Like, the whole thing reeks of, please give me awards for this. Well, I got some news. I got some nose news for you, Bradley. You're not winning it. First of all, what a huge miscalculation releasing this movie amidst the backdrop of what's going on in the Middle East.
That's a very good
Nobody
point.
Wants a guy named Bradley Cooper buddy. In a fake honker saying, look at me, I'm Jewish.
Nope. I do.
No, you don't. You do not. You take
I like
that
chaos.
Back. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what it is. It's chaos. Here are a few observations about this movie. Okay. It starts off right away, as many of these pretentious movies do, with very old Leonard Bernstein.
Well, wait a second. It doesn't start out with a red N and go wong.
Okay, you got me there. Okay. It starts with the N and goes gagong. You're right.
Which we
learned. That's how
that
it
is.
Starts. And then right after that.
Okay.
So the second start is a very old Leonard Bernstein with his huge honker and his Ronald Reagan-esque jowls. And this is a, yeah, go ahead.
And he says, "You're probably wondering how I got here."
I wish he had said that. That would have been better. Okay. So problem one is Bradley Cooper could not change his expression with this giant honker on his face. Like the whole movie, he could not emote. He couldn't do anything.
Is that hard for you?
It's very hard for me, but I've managed with years of practice. With years
is
of
that
practice.
Why you're in therapy? You
I was
think
just going to say, maybe it's
like
just
the
your
therapist
nose.
Eventually goes, "No, you're having these emotions, but it's like the geometry of your face is just yes. making it difficult for you to express them in other people."
Yes, it's very weighted into the center of my face. Everything is, you know, there's a big mound.
It's not
there
that it big.
What's that?
It's not that big. Oh, I don't know why you say
it's
that.
It's a small curvature of space-time around it.
This is Matthew McConaughey is orbiting it in Interstellar and trying to get his daughter's attention right around my nose. So anyway, I'm watching this movie. There's a scene.
Can
where
you see like the end of your nose as you're watching it and
okay,
his
that's
nose?
That's just about enough. we're only a couple more, and then we're gonna call it on the nose jokes. You know how like when you make jokes about you being bald, it's funny, but if somebody else says it, it's a war crime. It's a war crime. Yeah, it's funnier. So every week we have bald complaints. This week we're having nose I'll complaints. Stop. No. Please keep chiming in. You know I love it. There's a scene in the middle where, oh my God, he conducts, you know, it's just a one shot of him conducting a symphony. And I swear to, I cannot wait for you guys to see this. It could have been Jerry Lewis. It should have been Jerry Lewis or Jim Carrey doing this scene. And it would have been hilarious, except right. that he's trying to be serious and it's terrible. So here are a couple of other things.
The
other
is the drama at that point, like, "You'll never conduct Beethoven's Ninth." And it's like, "Oh, yes, I will." Like, what drama is there around this?
There's no drama. You learn nothing about Leonard Bernstein.
Right.
There's no.
Just to interject briefly, and I'm sorry. So there's Tar, and now there's this.
Tar was great.
Well, right, I don't. I have a long-standing opinion that I don't care about conductors, that they're frauds, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I
they're
agree
just
with that.
You. Anyone can wave a stick in front of the world's greatest musicians, and they know what to do. But what are we watching for, or hoping for, as we're seeing Leonard Bernstein and this guy from The Hangover wearing a big nose, waving his baton? Like, what am I hoping happens?
Well, you're hoping that it becomes good and entertaining, which it never does. And you're hoping to learn something about Leonard Bernstein, which you never really do. You see Weird. Early in the movie that he gets a very lucky break when another conductor gets sick. This is literally in the first moments of the movie. Another conductor gets sick. He gets called on to conduct at Carnegie Hall. And from that moment, he's Leonard Bernstein, the great American conductor. Like, there's no struggle.
What makes a great conductor? Like, you're better at waving the stick than the sick guy? Like, I don't... It doesn't seem real. I'm sorry.
I agree. But here's where you brought up Tar, which is a good comp.
Yeah.
Because they're both conductors.
I am picturing, like, if we had a conductor on here.
Yeah.
And I would just go, like, what are you doing?
I know. Yeah. We're going to, by the way, we booked Seiji Ozawa. So that's
I mean, that would be cool, wouldn't it?
I know, that would be very cool. But so Tar really gets
into... You are
into...
a frauda, Seiji Ozawa, that's what I'd call him.
No, that's not close enough. But I like the effort, but that's not close enough. Tar is a movie where you really examine the character of Tar.
And Tar's fake or real?
Fake.
Okay.
Fake. Oh. But
I care even less.
Cate Blanchett is a great actress.
I admire her.
Really get into her character, and it's very interesting. I could have watched another hour of Tar. This movie, Maestro, I could not wait for it to be over, for this hate crime.
How much of it is just conducting? like
too much
time-wise.
Totally hung up on
I mean, probably about 10 minutes.
That's it? So it's not greatest hits. It's not like, here's Beethoven's fifth, and here's Mozart's, you know, 40th.
No.
And here's...
So if it didn't tell you anything about his life, what did it actually tell you?
It kind of tried to tell you about the nature of his relationship with his wife, because I guess Leonard Bernstein was sort of famously bisexual, translation, gay. And so, like, he had all these, like... It was one of those very annoying movies where, like, they tried to incorporate famous people of the time, and they really had to let you know as an audience, because we're idiots now, who people were. So it'd be like walking around a party, it'd be like, that kook dancing in the corner is Jerry Robbins, and this kook over here, that's with the long face, that's Ira Gershwin. It was a lot of that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And the other people in the movie are quite good. Like, Sarah Silverman is in it. She has a small part. We're friends with her. She did a really good job. Okay. I actually texted her while watching it. I took a screen cap, and I said, I thought I was watching Maestro. It turns out I'm watching The Marvelous Miss Nasal, because she has large nostrils, and she's okay with that.
Did that get a ha-ha? Or
it got an all caps, how dare you. So I take
that's a
win.
That's good.
Yeah.
But... And Carey Mulligan.
It is fun to be able to text the stars of movies.
It is true.
That's the only reason to go into show business is you might see someone in a movie and be able to
That's why every year you and I get together to watch Tooth Fairy, so we can text Seth, hey, great job. Great job at Tooth Fairy.
I've never even heard of this.
But so Carey Mulligan is great. Carey Mulligan plays his wife. It's Bradley Cooper who is the problem in this
movie. I like
Bradley
Cooper.
Well, I like him in Step Brothers. And that's
only,
it.
Only?
That's it?
Who's he in Step Brothers? Oh, he's the mean
no,
brother.
No. I'm sorry. Wedding Crashers. Wedding Crashers.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yes, I loved him in Wedding Crashers, but that was it. And now he's trying to be Daniel Day-Lewis, and he just is so not that. And this movie, I'm calling for the over-nosed to storm the streets. I want Adrian Brody, Owen Wilson, Jason Schwartzman, basically, if you were in Darjeeling Limited, we're hitting the streets. I want to sneezing in the streets about this war crime against the over nose. Because, by the way, Bradley Cooper has a decent sized nose when it's just like regular. You didn't need to strap on.
Few people know Leonard Bernstein.
Yes.
And that, like, no one would know if you didn't have the correct nose.
No one would know.
No one would say, "Well, that was an inaccurate portrayal because he wasn't getting enough air."
It doesn't.
But Bradley Cooper, when he tries to get serious, you know, I really liked A Star Is Born, actually, and I'll say I loved
Hated
the soundtrack
it.
And I loved the
Hated
music.
It.
I don't know why I loved it.
Hated it.
But did you see this movie Burnt, where he played like a chef, and this was at the height of like chefs are the new rock stars. And just one of the things I remember in it that was just so appallingly bad was someone wanted him to do sous vide cooking, which is, you know, you wrap the food in this wrapper and then you put it in water at a certain temperature for a long time. And he goes, "I can't do that. It's like putting the food in a fucking condom."
It's
like, who's against sous vide cooking? Like, he just
passionately.
Seems to, I wonder if he just doesn't have enough. He hasn't had enough sort of oppositional, genuine hardship in his life because he's so good looking that he doesn't understand what torment is. So he thinks it's things like wearing a big nose and pushing a baton really hard yelling about sous vide cooking. Like, that's relatable agony to most people.
It's not at all, clearly.
No, but he wouldn't know because he's just observing and he goes, I don't know. Like, what would be the worst thing is like if you were conducting really hard and you were secretly bisexual. Like,
that, I know. That's the whole movie. And it stunk, by the way. And I've said this a few times to Family Guy people. So, excuse me, you've heard this. I'm calling this movie La Vie en Nose, which I think is appropriate for it.
Yes.
And
our
also
joke
to go
of
back.
The day.
There you go. See, is that original enough?
I would have gotten on and said, "This is the movie, and I'm calling it La Vie en Nose." There you go. First joke of the day.
First joke. Okay. I'm taking notes.
Okay.
To get back to A Star Is Born, my take on that was, hey, when that guy who can't sing and that lady who can't act did that movie for a fourth time, magic. Do you know that was the fourth Star Is Born? The fourth.
I didn't know that. I know
really liked some of the music in that. And I think it was written by Jason Isbell. I thought some of the songs were great.
A good shout out for him. All right.
Well, I worked on that movie when they did. Yeah, when they did the scene at SNL. So it was really bizarre because they had a full audience in the stands, and she's on stage, but they couldn't play the music in the studio. So all we could hear was her dancing, and the audience was sitting there, and all you could hear was her breathing, like every time she's dancing. And then the crowd wasn't allowed to clap for real. So they were all just like fake clapping.
Oh my
it was
God.
A very
Sounds
bizarre
like a nightmare.
It was, yes.
What is that?
It was really weird.
Anyway, Maestro stunk, and I don't want this to get taken out of context. Like, I have no problem with non-Jewish actors playing Jewish parts. I know some people have trouble with that. I don't care. Like, let Daniel Day-Lewis play any Jew. And
as I get older, like, the whole idea of movies is so stupid. Yeah. If I told you about any movie, anything, like you name the, like I go, why should I see this? And you go, it's about a conductor. It's like, why the fuck would I sit through that?
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's imagine you get to see Oppenheimer and he's having sex and stuff. Like, I don't care.
What would you imagine
if a Barbie came to life? It's a fucking child's toy. I wouldn't care if it went into the real world and like Carla from Cheers ran fucking Mattel. Like, it's all stupid.
Yeah. It's all playing pretend.
Is there anything that you would find interesting?
It's like because my kid is now doing sketch comedy.
Oh, I love
it. And I love watching her do it. And you go, it's for children. All this stuff is just for children, and children should be doing it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Adults doing it is fucking stupid.
Yeah. And Bradley Cooper looked like he was a child playing dress
up. Like, yeah, because it's like, I should be getting an award. It's like, you're an adult. You're lucky, like, you don't have to work in insurance. Just take that and be fine. You don't need a trophy.
Well, he's not getting a trophy.
Oh, so you could be in the company of the great Will Smith?
Oh.
Get a best acting Oscar?
Oh, that's still so funny. Anyway,
let's give him a standing O for his brave performance just after he punched a guy. Okay. Like, that just took the bloom up, the whole Oscar. It's like, how can anyone take this seriously?
I know. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And we'll Maestro's ridiculous. So I'm rooting for any other film over it. Well, first of all,
can we talk about what really matters? For
Oppenheimer's going to kick its ass. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Which is the Golden Bachelor.
Yeah.
So we're not going to reveal, and you and I still don't know who won because we haven't
Same.
Watched it, even though I think it won, meaning like they got to get married.
Okay. Right.
They got dearly.
Yeah.
I haven't watched the finale, but I watched everything else.
This is the Johnny joke I didn't do. If you know, and won, and they got married. If marriage is winning, what's losing? That was really the Johnny joke about it. But,
that's great.
So this article came out in the Hollywood Reporter. I instantly sent it to you guys, which was that Gary, the Bachelor, and I almost want to call him Jerry because the point of this
That's
article was
name.
He's kind of a fraud.
Yeah.
Ooh, yes.
He's not a restaurateur. He kind of owned part of a restaurant maybe it was in 1985 or something.
Bad.
It was a long time ago that he owned a share of like a drive-through hamburger place.
Yeah.
And that basically he's been kind of a maintenance man and custodian, kind of handyman at like a mental institution. Am I right?
Jerry the janitor.
I didn't remember that detail.
So first of all, I'm calling him the Golden Janitor.
Jerry the janitor.
And then also in my worst moments, because he's a fraud, I'm calling him the Golden Murderer.
Yeah.
Because of what I think he may have done. But
yes.
So a couple points. First, this attitude we've been making fun of for a few weeks now.
He's all like, oh gosh, and you know, and
like, yes. So it so makes sense that he's accustomed to talking to mental patients. And they say in the article he was very good at mediating conflicts between like the drugged out and insane. And it's like, it's so sad, but that's what works on older women romantically. It's just treat them like they're a
Nicely.
Mental patient in a violent frenzy and you're talking them down. And so anything they say, you go, that's so interesting.
Yeah,
I'm
really
feeling connected with you when you say that. And that's
it works.
That's like the Rosetta Stone for his behavior is he's treating everyone like a mental patient in a crisis. And it's working miraculously.
God. Wow.
But I can't wait to watch the finale. Go ahead.
I know.
Same.
I know. My wife had to go to a play last night, so I wasn't able to.
But
the second point is that, of course, then it went into this whole image he's been projecting is my wife dies and I haven't kissed anyone. It's like 3 months after his wife died, he was dating. He was living with a woman
one
he was
month.
Dating.
1 month.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought it was three. Anyway.
Yeah, that's the scary part.
Yeah, so he was living with a woman and he was engaging in kind of monstrous behavior, let's say, where he basically said to her, like, you know, you have to pay for this, like, and you have to pay for that. But then when we go out to eat, you have to give me money beforehand so then it can look like I'm paying at the restaurant, which
is that's
just
that's
so
really weird.
Evil.
But you and we all know, we've been in show business, that anytime someone's whole image is like how nice they are, whether it's Ellen or James Corden or any of these people, it's like,
true.
They're not.
Yes.
Absolutely. It's a big mess.
Because anyone who's like genuinely nice, like they know they're nice and they don't have to worry about it. And they're and they're like, if I'm misunderstood, that's fine.
Right.
I know what I'm doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I
very good point.
Any expose of Jerry, Gary, whoever this man is, and I don't think we're yet there with knowing who he is.
No.
Wait till after the marriage.
I'm the audience. For
I mean,
Bachelor
if,
scandal.
If this the best scenario for us would be Jerry Gary ends up marrying whoever the winner is, and then within a year that woman is dead.
Oh my
and
God! Dark.
Josh Mankiewicz does the Dateline.
Oh. Wow.
those are our worlds colliding. Let's get Mank. Make sure Mank is keeping a close eye on everything that's happening by that lake in Indiana.
Yeah, because my feeling is he still has some of the women's numbers from the show. Like, there's some scumbaggery going on. Like,
big
release
time.
Your texts, Jerry Gary.
Jerry Gary. Oh, God.
And anyway, but I also wanted to take a victory lap because called it.
Yes. You did.
Was the only one.
Oh, yes.
You were
the only one who from the beginning said this guy is not.
Yeah, no,
I
admit that I was swept up by Jerry Gary's act. but now I think the more information comes in,
it totally makes sense.
I'm on Team Goldie now.
Thank you.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, something else where we're all unfortunately on the same team is the next part of the show that we like to call Johnny Jokes.
Well, from Hollywood, here's
Nosy Johnny.
Nosy? Oh boy, I heard that. Maybe you heard this. An Alabama woman with two uteruses is now pregnant in both of them.
Oh.
Yeah. You can learn all about her magical journey next summer in Disney Pixar's Gross! With an exclamation point. Gross! Here's the next story. Former NFL quarterback Drew Brees.
I thought that, you know, there's also at least one of them is Nick Cannon's.
Of course, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I love how you bring Nick Cannon in. Anything pregnancy, Nick Cannon.
He has a lot of kids.
In. Yeah, he does. He sure does. Former NFL quarterback Drew Brees says that he would still be playing in the league right now, but his right arm doesn't work. Hey, that hasn't stopped Mac Jones. Pats fans heard from.
And I applaud you. I thought that was definitely going to be a masturbation joke.
I know, me too.
Oh, no.
I tip my hat to you. I stay away. Not taking the easy road.
The low-hanging fruit. The low-hanging dick. Here's another story from Thanksgiving. Dolly Parton stole the show when she performed at halftime of the Cowboys-Commanders game on Thanksgiving Day dressed as a cowboy cheerleader. The megastar said she wanted to show some little D's her big D's in Big D. And as an add-on, apparently she had her makeup applied at the Texas Gook Depository. Texas Gook Depository. And finally, I wanted to save this one for Jimmy Carr, and you'll see why. Edgy. Finally, music composed at Auschwitz will be performed for the first time ever this week. Ironically, the song is Jailbreak by Very Thin Lizzy. Very Thin Lizzy from Auschwitz. And I wanted to say, Goldie, before Johnny 2 kicks in, there is a friend of ours out there. His name is Doug Sarazen. Mm-hmm. And Doug Sarazen, every week for months now, has been sending me funny stories that he finds from wherever. He's like, I think this would make a good Johnny. I think that would make a good Johnny. It's incredibly helpful. And recently, he started actually sending in jokes. And now a lot of them, you know, are not quite right. But this week, he sent in Texas Gook Depository.
Wow.
Ooh.
And I got to give him a shout out because that made me laugh. Goldie, that made you laugh.
That was
so
a good joke.
Thank you, Doug, for that.
Go
that
Doug.
Was excellent. All right, Johnny 2.
All right. Well, during a week-long ceasefire in the Middle East, Palestinians and Israelis held a successful hostage exchange. Yeah, Israel got more than 70 citizens back, and in return, they also had to take James Harden.
That's a bad trade.
Okay. A new poll shows voters are far more concerned with the anemic economy than President Biden's age. Biden said, I can fix that, then instantly lowered interest rates and fell down the stairs. Okay. Meanwhile, former President Trump was booed at a South Carolina football game. Strange, since they normally root for the Cox.
Ah,
you have to know.
Yes, good college knowledge there.
College knowledge.
Singer Billie Eilish is opening a restaurant.
Ooh.
Yeah, it'll serve food you don't understand, but your daughter likes for some reason. And finally, the Carolina Panthers fired head coach Frank Reich after the team started a league-worst 1-10. Reich says he looks forward to spending more time with his family and also running them into the ground.
Yes.
Woo. I didn't have a Texas Gook Depository.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Doug. That was a good one. Yeah. Gook Depository. It's funny to even say.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All right, hey, folks, we're excited today. We're going to do something a little bit different here. We talk about, you know, we're writers who hate writing, blah, blah, blah. Today on the podcast, and I'm not sure that I've seen this anywhere before, we are going to write today on the podcast. So let me set this up a little bit. Goldie, who is absolutely one of our best writers at Family Guy, is about to write his next script for Family Guy. And so what happens there is, you know, people get together, work on a story. Goldie goes off for a couple days, writes an outline, which is a description of every scene that's going to be in the show. Then at Family Guy, we do this thing that they don't do at every show called a gag pass. So where Goldie takes his outline into a room of about five or six of our writers, And for a couple of days, they go through it and pitch jokes for each scene. And, you know, Goldie says, maybe I could use a joke here. I feel like maybe we could use a joke there. But also, listen, let's not get this twisted. Goldie is a guy who his scripts come in with probably the highest quotient of his own jokes of any script.
Difficult to
work with. Yeah, very, you know, very demanding. But so Goldie, when I don't want it to seem like we have a gag pass and so the script is written when he goes out. No, it gives you a few good jokes along the way to make you feel like, okay, here we go. But so today, what I thought that we would try to do is actually write the first scene of Goldie's upcoming script. Now, normally Goldie would do this entirely on his own with the help of the gag pass. And today, you know, it's just I'll be here. But we have another special guest who's going to be helping us today. And that is our writer's assistant, Hillman Hollister, has Yay. Generously agreed to be on the podcast today and to assist us in writing this scene. And we have three very talented writer's assistants on the show. Jordan Ramp, of course, has been a guest yes. here before. Hillman is now our guest today, and we also have Abby LaValle, very talented. And I spoke with Abby. I said, hey, don't get upset that Jordan and Hillman have been on before you. It's just because they're men, and you'll be last. So she will be on here eventually.
I'll cut that.
And, no, don't cut that. Leave that in. So Hillman is going to help us get through this today. Now, let's meet Hillman here. Hillman, say hello, first of all.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hi, Hillman. Welcome.
Was that good? That was great.
That was a good hello. We'll cut that.
Yeah, definitely. Get that out of there.
So, Hillman, let's talk a little bit before we get started about your journey to Family Guy. So mm-hmm. you are from Massachusetts.
Yep, Massachusetts boy.
Marblehead.
Mm-hmm. Born and raised.
North Shore, Marblehead.
Yeah.
And then...
I have a story about Marblehead just in brief, and I told it to Hillman when I first met him. So Marblehead's a very special town. It's a very nice town. It's on the water. So when I graduated high school, the big sort of celebration was we're going to go out to dinner in Marblehead. So we went to Marblehead. We all put on our nice clothes. And my parents, you know, said they were very proud of me. And they said, we have something very special to give you. And they gave me my grandfather's pocket watch. And they said, you know, this was your grandfather's pocket watch, and we've been holding it for your whole life, and we want you to have it. And I was like looking at it, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. Thank you. And then they said, you know, we should probably just keep it in the safe deposit box where it's safe. I've never seen it again. I was given my grandfather's pocket watch for maybe 10 minutes. I don't even know where it is. Right. I was told, it's so special you can have it. Actually, we don't trust you with it. Let's take it back. Anyway, that's my Marblehead story.
That's great. What a great
association. Yeah, it's pretty common.
A lot of the town is just people getting pocket watches briefly. Yeah.
I know that sounded interesting to you, but for me,
that's a dime a dozen. It's a pocket watch community. It's known as such all around Massachusetts. But so Hillman, you went to a little Hamas-sponsored university called Harvard.
That's right, yeah.
And you are good friends with our other showrunner, Rich Appel's son, Gabe. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. Cool. Yeah.
You were in college together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were in school together.
So did you go to Marblehead High and then to Harvard, or did you go to...
I was at Marblehead High. 4 years. Right. Go Headers.
Headers.
Really?
Well, actually... We're the Magicians, but also say Go Headers.
The Marblehead Magicians?
The Marblehead Magicians.
Your teams cannot possibly be good at anything. Like, it's a seaside community, and, like, you guys must be just getting crushed at basketball, like, everywhere you go.
I mean, we're up against Swamp Scott. We're up against the Salem Witches.
Names are amazing.
Yeah, so the Magicians versus Witches, that's always a big battle.
Who wins that one?
Yes. I mean, did you feel going to Harvard, which is obviously an amazing accomplishment, but was part of you like, I got to get out of here, though?
I think a little bit like I needed to get away from home, but I did feel like I could get that separation because I didn't spend that much time in actual Boston. So it kind of felt far away enough.
Were you on the Lampoon and such?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Look at that.
How do you get on the Lampoon?
Yeah, that's a good question.
There's like a... application process, there's kind of two rounds of submissions where
then they beat you in.
I'm calling bullshit on that. I think you showed up at the Lampoon office and said, "Hello, my name is Hillman Hollister." They said, "You're hired."
I have a screenplay called Hillman Hollister's Wonder Bazalister.
Like a sequel to Mr. Magorium's.
Yeah, exactly.
It writes itself.
Wasn't Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium on the big billboard in the last strike? When we were striking.
This is what we do it for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
This is what we're fighting for.
There was a big article about that guy because he had, I believe, in Vanity Fair that he has these bars tattooed on his wrist because he believes like his hands are magically writing for him and separate from his body or something.
Oh, wow.
That's one of the worst writer stories I've ever heard.
My hands are definitely attached to my body the entire time I'm writing.
Yeah, tend to be.
Yeah.
It works better that way.
Yeah. I'm not channeling. God is not talking through me. I guarantee you that.
God is talking.
I'm not channeling anything.
God is talking behind your back about you.
God is over my shoulder reading it and just shaking his head. Like, terrible. Cut that.
We're going to give him a lot to shake his head about today, hopefully. So Hillman, tell me a little bit about, what's the journey from Harvard out to LA? How does that happen?
Yeah, so I moved out in September 2019, and I was working as an assistant to this woman who ran an insurance company first.
Yes, just the dream.
I was already living the dream. And then I got an internship at Gloria Sanchez Productions, which is Will Ferrell's production company.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I was kind of, you know, stock in the office, sitting at the front desk. A lot of comedy heroes of mine coming in that I could offer water. Sometimes it was yes, sometimes it was no. But
room temperature and refrigerated.
Chilled.
Who are some of the people? Who are some of the heroes that you offered water to?
David Wayne is a big one for me. I was like shaking.
He once snubbed me at a restaurant. So
yeah.
Anyone else?
Well, don't meet my heroes.
Is that wow? So David Wayne is the one you lead with?
Yeah. I mean, Will Ferrell.
Okay, there you go.
Right.
Yeah, let's start with him. Did you meet Adam McKay while you were there?
I saw him, but I didn't meet him. No.
Okay.
Adam McKay just breezes by the front desk, doesn't say hello. That's
He's
got all the water he needs.
I would say, not breezes, lumbers.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a great place. And so did you come from there to Family Guy?
No. So then the pandemic happened. And so I was at home in Marblehead for about 9 months doing coverage basically for Gloria Sanchez. And then the internship ended and I came back out and it was significantly harder to find a job. So I worked at Mendocino Farms for a little bit. One of our better to lunch options, I would say.
I disagree.
I love their Caesar salad.
That's my alma mater.
I want Jones every day.
Jones is really
every
good.
Day.
Yeah. No. Terrible.
No, terrible.
So I worked at Mendocino Farms for a little, and then
when you apply to Mendocino Farms, you tell them you went to Harvard. What was their reaction?
Well, I already had a friend from Harvard working at Mendocino Farms.
Shit.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
So the whole thing is it all Harvard people in Mendocino Farms.
Mendo Farms is such a fucking Harvard feeder. It's just ridiculous.
The pipeline is disgusting.
It's
Nepo babies. My dad is a manager at Mendocino Farms.
It's Nepo baby lettuce.
I did. My friend Juan and I, who's also went to Harvard, we started working together.
So Mendo Farms with all your Harvard buddies, and then how do you come over to Family Guy?
So one of my really
Seth
good
came
friends,
in for a salad. No,
I pitched a cutaway. I am good friends with Mike Scarrett, who was a writer's assistant here before.
Right, yes.
And so he got hired somewhere else and he let me know that he was moving on because I was working, you know, not really doing anything. And he was like, "Do you want me to recommend you?" I said, "Yes." And then I interviewed with Alec and Rich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll never remember that
name. Oh, so Gabe didn't say, hey, my friend Hillman is looking
Oh,
for
I'm her. Sure he also.
And let me ask, who yeah. asked more awesome. Incisive and pointed questions in this interview? Was it Alec or Rich? Just out of curiosity.
We all know the answer to that question.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot of, can you type fast? And I said, yes. And they said, okay.
Yep.
That's
pretty much
skill.
The one requirement. Yeah. All right. So now, and how long have you been with us at Family Guy now?
I think it's been about a year and a half. Yeah. Okay. Started January 2022.
Felt a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
Well, that's almost 2 years now, Hillman. See?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, you're great at what you do, and you've really been shining recently in terms of pitching jokes and story ideas. You know, we've really enjoyed that. So.
Thanks, keep I appreciate up. It. Yeah,
you're doing.
Oh, I didn't
great
realize
job.
That you have writer's assistants pitch jokes and story ideas. Is
well, it's interesting. Sometimes it doesn't happen at all, which is fine. Like you just want somebody who can get all the shit down, who can type well, and doesn't miss stuff. But then it feels like for writer's assistants who want to be comedy writers, mm-hmm. after a little while they get more comfortable in what they're doing. And feel like, okay, I can throw in a joke here or there. And the writing staff loves that. Like, if anybody's going to break the silence by offering a potential joke, that's already a win. And Hillman, you've been not only breaking the silence, but offering jokes that we've used and ideas that we like.
That's so cool.
So that's a real bonus.
Thanks. Everyone's unbelievably nice.
Yeah, so it's a big change from the way Family Guy was 20 years ago, I'll tell you that much. It's very kumbaya in there now, which is great.
Yeah, David Wayne would have really fit in 20 years ago.
Oh, here we go. We're hitting that again. Another torpedo into the side of David Wayne.
Someone says they enjoyed your movie in a restaurant. You could just say thank you. I'm just throwing it out there.
Oh, that's what happened?
Yeah,
oh,
I said no. I really like the Baxter. And it's just like, I was like, oh. No one's coming up. Look around, man. The whole restaurant isn't like the fucking Baxter was awesome. There's one dude in here who liked the Baxter, and it's me. So you can't fucking choose of everyone in here who you get to interact with. It's me.
I love that it was
talking about the Baxter.
I love it was about the Baxter, which is just a word I barely remember as something related to an entertainment thing that happened.
Hope you're enjoying your omelet.
James Corden wasn't. All right, so that's enough about Hillman. We get it. He's
Thank
a good
you.
Guy. He's good at his job. We're happy he's here. We're thanking him for being here today. So now, Hillman, let's pull up on the screen a blank script, and here's Goldie's outline.
And I just want to point out, we're skipping the 3 days of panicked masturbation that you'd normally do before you start writing.
Right.
We're sort of skipping the frantic Googling. We're,
yes.
You know, there's a lot we're not doing here. The yelling at your family that you work. And so it's really hard.
Yep.
A lot of steps we're going over. So should we just set up like the scene we're writing?
Goldie, I want you to set up what this first scene is supposed to be.
Okay. Well, it's a scene about Brian, who's taking a writer's workshop or a class at a community college, and he is, you know, a writer on the show, but he's doesn't have an idea, basically.
Yep.
He's stuck, he has writer's block, and it comes to a head with a teacher saying that, you know, if you can't take this seriously, then maybe you have no business being a writer. So we're just trying to get to the next scene, which is that story-wise, Brian's having a crisis of confidence that he can't write.
Right.
So we're trying to show dramatically and in a funny way.
So this
happening.
Is, yeah, this is a scene at Quahog Community College. It's going to be taught by this professor character that is new. And
yeah. We could pitch on the character. I mean, I just put, you know, I basically made the character a legendary Irish author.
Right.
Who's in the outline, I said this and it'll change, but the joke I made was he's now teaching community college because he drunkenly snowplowed over Jeremy Renner. Just a horrible coincidence for that man.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that.
That's
like
fine.
That.
We could do that.
So let's,
we could pitch on that.
Let's go into the script and put out those very first slug lines. Yeah. So let's do exterior establishing Quahog Community College. I don't know why. Why doesn't that look bold? I'm very thrown off already. After
yeah,
praising Hillman
bold.
Up and down. There we go. Okay.
There's going to be a lot of that.
Wow. I mean, I'm going to pitch a sign gag.
I was going to say, should we have a sign gag?
Sign says Quahog Community College, established yesterday.
That's first joke of the day right there. I was going to say we should pitch on a sign gag, and you had it ready to go. Established yesterday. That's if we don't write anything more, we've already done great work here.
That felt fun.
Yeah, that's great. Okay,
and by the way, like in a Family Guy script, that first joke can hold you up for days. So just to have something on the paper that's a kind of laugh, that is a recognizable joke, we can now start writing.
Exactly.
That's cool.
And right. And it's like, put the masturbation tissues away. We're in it now. So now we go interior, as Hillman has already started to do. Say, Quahog Community College classroom, same. And when we say same, that means to indicate the same time as the day that's above it. Boy, that's boring. What is this element called, Hillman, the interior and exterior in Final Draft?
Scene heading.
Scene heading. Okay, so we've written our scene headings.
You don't know that?
I know, I forget. I always call it a slug line, and I just forget.
My God.
And so what we wrote, sorry, a sign outside reads, Quahog Community College established yesterday. That's what we call an action line. Okay, go ahead, Goldie. Yeah.
So I was going to say, I'm just going to start pitching on to set up the scene, and we can, you know, reject this, whatever. But my first instinct is Brian sits among a group of diverse students listening to their professor, Megan O'Callaghan.
Yes.
Nice.
And for those of you who don't know out there, Megan O'Callaghan is a mashup of two Family Guy writers, Patrick Meighan and Steve Callaghan, who definitely deserve this tip of the cap because they're also...
So, and this is where just as... Here's where, like, the confusion will begin as you sit down and write, right? Because you say, in the outline, we've said, oh, this is, like, a legendary Irish author. So do you want, when you enter the scene, like, in my head, I go, do I have Brian whisper to another student, like, I can't believe the legendary Megan O'Callaghan is teaching this course, you know, or something. Like, do you need to do that to tell the audience? I don't think we do, but I'm just saying, like, this is why it takes time to do these things, and you can't just copy and paste the outline in.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that said, to this point, I think what a good thing to do would be to start with Megan O'Callaghan speaking. I think there's a way in his first line to get out that information that you wanted Brian or someone to whisper in class. I think we can get it from this character himself. I also was reading your gag pass notes, and I really liked that joke in there about as a reminder, if you leave your scarf, like, I will take it. And like, I think it could be funny to have just a reminder, if you leave your scarf, it becomes mine. It feels like, I don't know, that was a funny way to possibly end his first line.
Looking at the gag pass, the thing that made me laugh was him maybe saying, if anyone doesn't want to be a professional writer for the rest of your lives, get up and leave right now because you're all going to make it.
I mean, that's a very, I think they can both be in there. I think we can, I think we just start with some boilerplate stuff like, good afternoon, students. And should it be like...
I mean, I'm not trying to haggle every point. But I mean, should we be in the middle of class? Like, are we really starting the class?
Well, maybe here's
what
we do.
Or is he in the middle of
his lecture? Here's what we do. So in the action line, Hillman, go up to the action line after O'Callaghan. Just say, on the board behind him is written, what is this called? Like, creative writing... 101. I mean, does that help? Just to, you know, it tells us where we are and who this guy is.
Right.
Yeah.
Creative writing 101. Can we do something with that? I don't know that you want the funniest thing.
There. I don't necessarily want to make that a joke. It doesn't have to be 101. I just think that
I'm just wondering if for some reason it's like, you know, in my head I just see a number and it's like creative writing 289. That's only a joke if you're thinking of 101.
Yeah, well, maybe right. If you said 102.
I think creative writing 101 is fine.
Okay. So take away Get Afternoon Students, because I think Goldie could be right about just being in the middle of something.
Yeah.
So now we come into like what are we in the middle of here? And what I like getting out that
point about he's telling them what pronouns are and they're shocked to hear it.
I like the idea
this
of
maybe
getting
your first introduction to something called pronouns.
Huh?
We're not doing that. But
the thing you liked about you're all gonna make it. It feels like we could get to that pretty quickly.
Tough talk. All right. If anyone doesn't want to be a professional writer for the rest of your lives, get out. It's an uneasy beat. Because you're all going to make it.
And just, you can say, like, the students nod to each other.
I don't know why I want to touch the burn. You know what I mean? Like, there's no reason to do this, and there's no, but part of me just wants to get like, in the event of a fire, I may get some of your pronouns wrong. I apologize. Like, there's no reason to do that.
Especially that guy. I'm a woman. See? I like that. Say, do a Megan O'Callaghan line to say.
Now,
in the event of a fire, I may get some of your pronouns wrong.
An audible gasp.
Especially that guy. I'm a woman, see?
Especially?
Well, I can already see we're cutting this, but it's fun to see on the screen. Yeah.
This is what you do.
We're just writing. Draft. Yeah, I mean, we already have half a page.
Especially yeah. That
feels
guy.
Like a decent day.
Yeah. See?
It's funny.
And so now we kind of want to get to the meat of the scene, which is he's got a call on Brian to do to fulfill some assignment that Brian has not completed.
Right. Now I'm wondering, in true writerly fashion, are the first lines wrong because they seem to imply that it's the first day of class? And now we're showing that, you know, there have been previous weeks of this course.
Well, how about instead of all right, just change all right to, and as I've said before.
Yeah. Because you're all going to make it.
No. In the unlikely event of a fire. No, you don't. That's just adding an extra word.
I feel like we should cut this. It's just, we're never doing this.
I just leave it in for now. We're just doing the demonstration. And
all right, we're having fun.
But Goldie's right. Sometimes you write stuff that makes you giggle, but you kind of know it's
going to. It didn't even really make us laugh. It just felt fun to do.
Okay.
So now we're doing, he's calling on Brian.
So it seems like Megan O'Callaghan needs to continue talking.
Yeah, Brian.
Our first
your
short
turn
story.
To read this week. I believe you have a short story for us, Mr. Griffin.
Say our first short story presentation today will be Mr. Brian Griffin.
And then I guess Brian would say something like, well, I don't really have a story per se. What do you have? An idea. What kind of idea? Well, it's about, I mean, is that how you want to get into it?
It's almost like, do we need to have a beat of Brian, like, I don't know. Does he need to like make, is it funnier if he makes some kind of excuse for himself? Hey, sorry, I don't have this ready. I guess the me ate my homework. No one laughs.
That's funny.
Yeah.
It's a joke we can be proud of.
Yeah, sorry, I don't have this ready today. And then like broad in parentheses. I guess the me ate my homework. the class is silent.
Do you even have an idea? Or is it, you know, me getting
okay? Yeah.
And then
oh, too many.
What's one of them?
Yeah. I mean, should Brian drag that out a little longer? Like, oh, too many, made of ideas.
Yeah.
What's one of them?
I'm the CEO of Ideas, Inc., a limited liability corporation in the state of Delaware. It's too wordy.
but now, didn't you have in your outline like a couple of fake ideas?
Yep, we've got those.
Okay.
The stuff about there's a dog in a class who's...
I like the leading with that first one. Okay, here's my first one. The boy with the dragon tattoo.
You just changed girl to boy.
All right, let's sit on this for a minute, though. Is that the best one to lead with, Goldie? Do you think?
Well, I mean, in the outline we have him going like, there's an idea about a dog taking a writing class who desperately needs an idea. And then O'Callaghan says, that's not an idea. You're just describing what's happening.
Yeah, that might be a better way into it. Let's do that.
It's not the most groundbreaking, but
I think you can keep funny. Oh, too many ideas. What's one of them? And then get into the thing we were just talking about. Brian.
It's about a dog, ellipses, who's taking a writing class, ellipses, who desperately needs an idea. And then O'Callaghan says, that's not an idea, you're just describing what's happening. Right. What about the boy with the dragon tattoo?
Right. Just changed just girl to boy. It's
like, that's very gendered. Sorry. He apologizes.
That's very hetero. What is it? That's very gender what? Normative?
That's very gendered. Yeah. Or gender normative, heteronormative.
That's very heteronormative. I'm sorry, sir. Ma'am. Another thing to cut.
It's still the same joke and it's still funny. Yeah, I know.
Student OS.
The they with the dragon tattoo? The problem is the dragon tattoo, not the person attached to it.
Yeah, that's very heteronormative. Yeah, so then do Brian the they with the dragon tattoo.
And then, this is fun. We're not doing any of this, but I like it's fun.
They with the dragon tattoo, and then Megan O'Callaghan. The problem is not what did you say?
The problem is the dragon tattoo, not the gender of the person who has it. The problem is the unoriginal dragon tattoo.
And this all has to end basically with Brian being tossed out of the class, right?
Yeah. I mean, we could go further. I gritty shoots and ladders made me laugh. Give me, for me, it says, give me a real idea. Gritty shoots and ladders?
Yeah. I like give me a real idea. And maybe we can just pitch on that for a minute, see if we can beat. Yeah. Who has it? Now give me a real idea. Yeah. So this one just has to be like a quick, another unoriginal.
Yeah. I'm trying to come to an idea of like, I'll need help with the reference, right? But it's like Bradley Cooper is Teddy Roosevelt or something. You know? Like it's just
I was in the area of pitch. Now give me a real idea. Beat and Brian goes about a girl. Just some other like easy gender swap.
Right. Yeah, I don't know that I want to camp too much on the gender stuff.
Yeah, sure.
There's more late. It feels a little bit like a 51-year-old guy trying to take a desperate stab at relevance and missing and stabbing his own leg.
Hey, you've got a few more days until you're that.
Yeah, not much longer.
I know.
When a big part of your life is enjoying just being 50.
I know.
Give me a real idea. Kibbles and Brits?
Tastes lovely, Governor. Yeah. Kibbles and Brits.
James Corden is Donald Kibble.
In Kibbles and Brits. Donald. Sir Donald Kibble.
It's a movie idea.
Yeah. That's almost like too creative somehow. It's like too good. Ploppenheimer, about a really big dump. Brian, I'm not sure this class is for you.
What are the big books right now? I don't even know. How sad.
Well, it could be a book or a movie. Like, it just could be anything.
Yeah.
You remember
it just feels like he would be trying to take a stab at relevancy like I just was,
Right, whatever the hot thing is now. But that's the problem. Everything's so spread out. There's no, like, one movie that everyone gets. I mean, unless it's Barbie or Oppenheimer.
Yeah, honestly. I was trying to think, like, a novelization of Cabbage Patch Kids or...
Right. Now give me a real idea.
Donald Faison is a braff away. Is that a title for his memoirs?
Braff away.
I don't know.
Yeah, I am a little annoyed that we have to live through the second wave of Zach Braff, even if it's just in a commercial.
Some popular movies right now.
Yeah.
Saltburn.
Oh, yeah.
The Killer, Five Nights at Freddy's. Maestro, your favorite. Yeah.
What if the Quaker Oats guy was a serial killer?
The postman always rings once. Let's see. Now give me a real idea. By the way, do you picture this Megan O'Callaghan with any kind of accent?
Maybe, I mean, like a Liam Neeson Irish.
Oh, that's good.
Mm. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, have him be very, the problem is.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I thought it'd be funny to hear why he's disgraced in doing this, you know, at the beginning.
That could be, when you do your own pass on this, feel free to add any of those details. Taken 2, Electric Boogaloo? Nope.
Goldie just looked away.
Oh, here we go. The Karate Adult. Brian, I'm not sure this class is for you.
That's funny enough for now.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah, it's pretty good. That could be, that's what it could be. That's a good joke.
Brian, I'm not sure this class is a fit for you. Please turn in your scarf and leave. Brian sadly hands Megan O'Callaghan his scarf.
Then do you want to do a Survivor-type exit interview?
Well, no, I see, because I want to get to... Yeah, Brian sadly turns in his scarf and leaves and exits. I love this Joe thing, so set this up, Goldie.
Well, Brian sadly turns in his scarf as Brian gathers his things, the class continues, because Brian should be here to see this next
to
part.
See Joe's?
Yeah, don't you think?
No.
Okay.
No. I think he can leave, and then like Megan O'Callaghan can say like, okay, next up, Joe Swanson, and then just get right into it.
Are we doing the one I liked or the one you like?
I couldn't even figure out the way. Go into the gag pass for a sec. We'll do the one you liked, but...
Yeah, so here were some of the options from the gag pass.
Wait, slow down here. I like to call me Ishmael, but scroll down. No, I guess let's do the one you liked, because I can't even figure out what was the one that made me laugh so hard.
Dedication for Bonnie.
So angle on Joe, who sits in the middle of the class.
And reads off a manuscript.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe, dedication, colon, for Bonnie, period. And then in parentheses, turns page.
Yes.
Turns page. Bonnie.
And then what's the line?
Yeah, let's get the folded line there.
Bonnie lay dead in a pool of blood. Detective Bo Bonson. Held the gun, not sure he could ever explain this away.
Bo Bonson.
And then we're out.
Yeah, I mean, did you want Megan O'Callaghan saying, now that is writing? Or
No, okay. I think you just get out on the Joe line. That's hilarious. Okay, so by the way, that is scene one.
That's wow. A scene.
Cool. Obviously, when Goldie takes this on his own and goes back through it, he'll probably change some things, lose some things, add some things. But that wasn't so much the sense of how Goldie might write this on his own, but that's definitely a miniaturized version of how we would write a scene in the room. And honestly, even when we have five or six writers there, I feel like Goldie contributes the same amount as he did just now, which is a lot.
Well, one of the things that I've heard about writing that really has stuck with me, and someone said, Chuck Lorre said this, was that every scene in a sitcom is either about one thing or nothing.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so this scene was just Brian struggling in a writing class, right?
Yes.
So when we go back through this, it'll probably be pared down even more.
Right.
To just, it's like the stuff about the gender, whatever. If that's unbelievably funny, it can stay in.
Right.
But the bar is really high to keep extraneous comedy. Like you're not just looking for... Hey, let's just have a couple B-minus jokes and then do the thing with Brian. It's like if each of these jokes is something that the first time you see it really makes you laugh, it can stay in.
Yes.
And if so not, you don't need it, because we're always long. Every script is too long. No one has ever handed in a script that was too short in the history of TV.
Tom famously did once.
But it was unfinished.
Yes, it was like right. unfinished symphony.
No one's ever handed in a completed script that was too short.
It was an unfinished symphony entirely on kazoo. So now, Goldie, let's read the scene, and you can be Brian and Joe.
Okay.
I'll do the stage directions and the writer teacher. So, Franz, here is the first scene of Goldie's script that we just wrote here on the podcast. Okay, we start. Exterior establishing shot, Quahog Community College, day. A sign outside reads, Quahog Community College, established yesterday. Interior Quahog Community College classroom, same. Brian sits among a group of diverse students listening to their professor, Megan O'Callaghan. On the board behind him is written Creative Writing 101. And as I've said before, if anyone doesn't want to be a professional writer for the rest of your lives, get out. There's an uneasy beat. Because you're all going to make it. The students nod to each other. Now, in the event of a fire, I may get some of your pronouns wrong, especially that guy.
I'm a woman.
See? Our first story presentation today will be Mr. Brian Griffin.
Oh, sorry, I don't have this ready today. I guess the me ate my homework.
The class is silent. Do you have an idea?
Oh, too many. Made of ideas.
What's one of them?
It's about a dog who's taking a writing class who desperately needs an idea.
That's not an idea. You're just describing what's happening.
Right. What about the boy with the dragon tattoo?
That's very heteronormative.
They with the dragon tattoo?
The problem is the unoriginal dragon tattoo, not the gender of the person who has it. Now give me a real idea.
Oh, here we go. The karate adult.
Brian, I'm not sure this class is a fit for you. Please turn in your scarf and leave. Brian sadly turns in his scarf and exits. Okay, next up, Joe Swanson. Angle on Joe, who sits in the middle of the class and reads off a manuscript.
Dedication for Bonnie. Bonnie lay dead in a pool of blood. Detective Bo Bonson held the gun, not sure he could ever explain this away.
And we're out.
So even reading through that...
Yeah, there were some things to
like, adjust. I would just go back, because this is something we should do too, because you've heard it, and you just go... sorry, scroll up, please. I would change the line to, if anyone doesn't want to be a professional writer the rest of your lives, I would cut the rest of your lives. I would just say, if anyone doesn't want to be a professional writer, get out.
Yes.
Right. That felt long.
Yep.
Because you're all going to make it. And then this fire stuff we're cutting with the pronouns, like, that just, to me, was flat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And then... Yep. And sorry, so we don't have this ready. We don't have to do that right now. I'm just saying.
No. I would. You might as well just cut it right now.
Yeah.
So start with our first short story.
And then we have a today situation where two lines in a row we have the word today.
Yeah, just cut that one so you can have, sorry, I don't have this ready.
Sorry, comma, not quite ready.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not quite ready, right? I guess the me ate my homework. Do you even have an idea? What's one of them? About a dog. You're describing what's happening, right?
Yep.
What about the boy with the dragon tattoo? And then we'd cut this heteronormative in the they with a dragon tattoo. What about the boy with the dragon tattoo? Just for our purposes today, we could say, just give me a real idea. Like, he would know that that's... So, yeah. I mean, there's stuff to still be done. But, I mean, that's the process, right? As you put in
Hillman,
stuff, you take out stuff.
Just change that O to okay in Brian's line there. Okay, here we go. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It's a little more streamlined now. It was a good little edit pass you just did.
Yeah, and now it's two pages, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Look at that.
That's two the pages. Right length for a scene. If you start once you start getting on that third page sometimes, you're doing too much in the scene.
Yep.
Right.
No, this is the perfect
especially because it's animation. Like we're not paying for the next set. So there's no reason to linger at this community college very long.
Exactly. Well, that was fun. And it was actually, we did it pretty quickly.
Yeah,
which was
very impressive.
Good. I was kind of looking at the clock at 9:17, like, oh, fuck. But then we nailed it.
Yeah,
that was cool.
So now, obviously, Goldie on his own will have to do that process, 15, 20 times over with each scene. But as you just heard now, he's quite good at it. So I'm confident that will be a good script. Hillman, you were excellent. Seamless.
Yeah. Thanks.
Never really a distraction. Cool. You know, okay. Maybe one or two little hiccups. But that's, you know,
you at one point spelled just J-S-U-T, I noticed.
Right.
It took everything I had not to unleash a fusillade of contempt.
And that was because I thought it was spelled that way.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And Hillman got a 5 on the J-Suts, so that's still fresh in his memory. Hillman, thank you so much
for helping us
with this today. And it was a pleasure awesome. Just briefly getting into your story because, you know, enough's enough. The Mendo Farms thing was a highlight. Now we'll take that with us. Every time we order from there now, believe me, we'll be getting a ribbing. But thanks for helping us out with this. I hope the listeners enjoyed it as much as we did. And, you know, we'll see it work in a little bit. And feel free to mute yourself and stay on for the rest of this.
Cool.
For the rest of this, which begins with something that we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
Oh, beautiful us. All right, well, so this was my topic this week, and this is top 5 New York phrases. So these are phrases that you would hear from New Yorkers or in the New York area. Here we go. Number 5, pretty easy one. The fuck out of here.
Already crossover.
You know, the fuck out of here. You take the get off it. The fuck out of here.
The fuck out of here.
Number 4, I hear this a lot in New York cop shows. The end of the day. You know, at the end of the day, who cares? All right, number 3. This is a little one that I really enjoy. Go ahead. Go ahead. That's their way of saying after you. Go ahead. Get that a lot. Number 2, we're getting into kind of obvious territory here. Not for nothing.
Right.
Not for nothing, but the Mets are in trouble. And number 1, you got to go chalk. Forget about it. Forget about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Fun list. Go ahead,
JC. It was a fun list, yes. Okay. All right. So my number 5 is I'm just a couple blocks away.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And it's
that's good.
Wait, is it avenue or street blocks? Like, what?
You've had friends in New York when you hear that phrase.
Yes. Number 4, I lived in Williamsburg for most of the time. I was in Brooklyn and I was never approached, but the phrase I heard over and over and over again was, "Excuse me, are you Jewish?" And I don't know, it actually worked on someone I know that a lot of people have heard of.
Say yes to that. There's nothing good waiting on the other end of that question.
Do you know who it worked on? It worked on a singer named Modest Yahoo.
Oh.
And that changed his life. He's like one of the most well-known Hasidic Jewish, or was, yeah. So anyway.
Wait, so someone approached him in the street and made him Hasidic?
They asked him, "Are you Jewish?" And he said, "Yeah." And they just started talking and they introduced him they brought him to the Chabad house. He went, it worked. Wow. That's why they do it, because they're trying to recruit people.
There's a lot to say there remain unsaid.
It's fascinating, yes.
Yeah, that's one word for it.
You're just as likely to be clubbed in the head saying yes to that as you are to be brought to the Chabad house.
Chabad that.
What was that? Number 3?
Yeah.
Online. Versus in line. I'm going to get online. I feel like it's a very New York. Never heard it until I got to New York.
Like it.
My number 2 is the fuck out of here. Same thing.
The fuck out of here.
And number 1 for me, I heard this from some coworkers. If you'd make someone laugh, they'd be like, "You're so stupid." They tell you you're so stupid when you make them laugh. You're so stupid. So.
All right. I like that.
All right. Here's my list. Number 5, so's your mother.
That's good.
Number 4 from the great Ed Koch. How am I doing?
Yep.
And number 3 from the great Joey Tribbiani. How you doing?
Nice.
Well done. Well done.
Number 2. It's very effective. Boston sucks.
Yeah.
Ooh,
especially when we did suck.
Yeah, they were right. They were right about that a lot.
And number 1, I can't believe no one else had this. And it may be a little more Jersey than New York, but just give it to me. Oh!
No, that's good. That was an oversight.
That's really funny.
Oh! All right, that was fun, Goldie. What are we going to top five about next week?
Top five things you miss from your childhood.
Oh, I miss those things. That'll be fun next week. Also, next week we have
Diallo Riddle.
Riddle.
That's right.
Riddle me, riddle us this next week. Diallo Riddle, and he's like...
Well, he's a co-host of Luxury, Blake Robin, on One Song, who we've already spoken to, but he's a very successful TV writer as well. He had his own series, South Side. And
nice.
He's worked for Fallon. He's done a lot. So
awesome.
And he's a DJ. I mean, he's actor. He's multi-talented.
Great. Cool. Awesome. Well, talking with Blake was so fun, I'm sure. Talking with Diallo is going to be just as fun.
Yeah.
So that's next week. And now we're going to end the show, as we do every week, on a high note. Oh, Tom and Max. I feel like I hijack first every time. Does anyone care?
Or I'll go.
Go first. Go ahead.
Whatever. So I used to not be able to sleep unless like nothing or no one was touching me. I just like had to be almost hermetically sealed. But recently... I'm just so tired, I think, that I can, and my younger kid needs to go to sleep with someone, that I go in her bed, and then the dog comes and, like, gets in my knees, and I'm just surrounded by, like, just delightful little creatures, and I fall right to sleep, and I'm nice and warm, and I, like,
that's
I get
so
it now.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice.
Aww.
That is that, nice.
That's
yeah.
a great
very sweet.
High note.
Very sweet.
My high note was Ted Danson.
Oh, yeah.
Ted Danson came into the office yesterday. He is a delight. Yeah. If any of our listeners has ever worked with him and can confirm he is actually that much of a delight, he was so sweet. One line he came in.
That guy just, everything that guy touches is great. I mean, like, just to think, obviously Cheers, and we've talked about how we feel about that show. But I mean, he's so funny on Curb.
Yeah,
you know,
and also
he's just like been able to keep his ball in the air for so long of being like this funny, handsome guy, which is really hard to pull off. Just ask John Hamm. But yeah, Ted Danson has done it forever. And yeah, it was a thrill. Get it, JC. Thank you for introducing him to me. That was really nice.
Yeah, of course.
Great. All right, my high note is this podcast. I feel like between Mank and Jimmy Carr, we hit a Mulaney high, okay?
Yes, of course.
And of course, all the reports we got back for our end of the year, it was like everybody started listening because John Mulaney. John Mulaney was the number one, and John Mulaney this. And that was awesome, and we thank him eternally for that.
John.
But we had this John Mulaney high, and then things felt like they were kind of settling back down.
As people realized we wouldn't have John Mulaney again.
Yeah.
I know. We couldn't have him on every week. But Mank, his numbers were huge for us.
Huge.
And then we had Jimmy Carr talking about us, and we've had people reaching out that they came to us because of Jimmy Carr. Yes. And it just feels like, you know, you go through these ups and downs, and right now it feels like a momentary up that I'm enjoying. So, high note this podcast.
I love that high note.
Yeah. All right. That's our show today. Thank you for listening to us write, which is basically the entire show of Hamilton is watching a guy write. Very exciting. We enjoyed it. We thought it was a fun thing. Thanks again to Hillman Hollister.
Thank you, Hillman.
For all the help and for being so great at work. Thank you, too, for being awesome.
Thank
you all for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.
Nope, I quit.
Shit.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
I'll never remember that day.
It's a small curvature of space-time around it.